intellectual property. And what we've learned recently is that it's not just domain names and trademarks we're talking about. We're talking about global surveillance of Internet users. That is one of the most insistent demands of the trademark and intellectual property interests, which, by the way, is no longer just trademark interests. We're talking about people like the Motion Picture Association of America, who are content providers, is that the domain name contact information be legally required to be accurate and globally visible. And why do they want that? Because that is their surveillance mechanism for the enforcement of intellectual property on a global basis. So there is no question in my mind, having studied this issue for the last 4 years, that when the trademark interests demand that the root, that the domain name system be regulated in order to make domain name owners globally visible and have completely accurate contact information, and that any registration of a domain name be subject to protective processes for trademarks, that they are doing exactly what Michael said he didn't think they were doing, that they are going after the root as a bottleneck in order to control things. Now, let us not express any value judgment about whether that's justified at this point. You probably all know how I feel about it, but the point is that is, in fact, what is happening. We are, in fact, getting governance primarily because of the trademark issue. The other issue is that the approach of ICANN to registration has been to impose a specific economic business model on the domain name industry. It's very clear that ICANN is committed to a process of shared registries rather than proprietary registries, and that they intend to implement that particular business model. And that, again, is a question of economic regulation. It is not an act of technical coordination. Having been intimately involved in working group discussions, I can tell you that what's going on at the lower levels of ICANN. Too loud? How much time do I have? Okay. What's going on at the working group level is extremely disturbing if you are concerned about technical coordination as opposed to governance. You will learn, for example, that there are people who have proposed that within working group C that the new top-level domains be used as a process of segregating content into various domains. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that the board has adopted those decisions, but there's no guarantee that they won't in the future. They have the power to do it. There are people within the structure who are advocating that. It could happen. And we've also learned that national governments have asserted sovereignty claims on the country code top-level domains, in effect saying the representation of their country by a two-letter code gives them a political right, a sovereignty right, to control what goes on under that domain and who the domain is delegated to. All of this has absolutely nothing to do with technical coordination. Now, Michael said that the process is substance, and historians take that one step further. We look at how institutions evolve, and we learn, indeed, that process is substance. So look at how ICANN has evolved. In 1990, Vince Cerf formed the Internet Architecture Board, and then the Internet Society, to sort of serve as the home of the Internet Architecture Board. In 1995 and 96, IANA, which I hope you know what it is by now, was chartered by the Internet Society. And there were attempts made, even at that early date, to take the root out of the control of the government and put it into the hands of the Internet Society via its charter of IANA. So the discussion of privatization was going on well before the NTI proceeding, well before the creation of ICANN. Now, what happened is John Postel proposed to create a lot of new top-level domains, and he ran into opposition from two very powerful sources. One, the trademark owners. Two, a particular person at the International Telecommunication who thought that the ITU should be involved in this, and also that IANA itself had no authority to be adding new top-level domains or privatizing the root. So what happened next? IANA went out and formed a coalition with its two most powerful opponents from the earlier stage. They said, we're going to create a new governance structure, and it's going to include the World Intellectual Property Owners and the International Trademark Association. It's going to include the International Telecommunications Union. and they set about creating a new governance structure completely on their own initiative with no legal authority, basically forming a coalition of these people. They proposed a shared registry model. They proposed a fairly restricted top-level domain space, highly cartelized, only 70 top-level domains. And they directly linked domain name assignments to trademark protection. Okay? Does that all sound familiar? What happened with the white paper then? Well, first of all, the government intervened, and it looked like it was going to do something different. It looked like it was going to add new top-level domains. But ultimately, the white paper abdicated direct government action. And this came about as a result of the behind-the-scenes deal with the U.S. government, the Europeans, IBM and its Global Internet Project, or GIP, WIPO, and ISOC, IANA. And they agreed pretty much on a governance agenda that was essentially the same as the GTLD MOU, only now it had the official imprimatur of the Europeans, which it did not have before. So they added a new member to the coalition. Now here's where the failure really took place. If we had been serious about the concept of self-governance, the initial board appointed to run ICANN, whether you consider it an initial board or an interim board, should have been enough to create some buy-in among at least more than one of the factions involved in this fight over internet governance. But what happened is that the initial board gave complete control of ICANN to the GTLD MOU coalition. Complete control. Essentially, the CEO, Mike Roberts, was a member of the GTLD MOU coalition. As I understand it, Dyson was a supporter of it. We'll hear about that. Jun Murai was a member of it. And there was essentially the European people that were appointed to the board were vetted in that direction. And there was a few sort of neutral dignitaries on the board who didn't know anything about the issues and were easily sort of put into the position of being going along with the predetermined agenda. So here's my conclusions. I think I need 3 more minutes. Rhetoric of industry self-regulation was a mask. We weren't interested in industry self-regulation so much as we were interested in giving control to a specific coalition. So I think that the Magaziner and the Department of Commerce honestly believed that this coalition was fully representative of the internet community. The fact is they were wrong. So they gave control to one faction. Their approach to the problem concentrated exclusively on e-commerce and completely ignored the individual rights and freedom of speech implications of communication of the internet. The initial board was controlled essentially by a faction with a specific agenda, and it's very clear that that agenda did not command consensus. There were many opponents, and they were not just NSI. And this faction tried to implement the agenda as quickly as they could. They tried to implement it rather than build process. They tried to become policy makers immediately rather than creating representational structures and processes that Michael spoke so eloquently about. And that is what ultimately has created the chaos that he's talking about. Okay, I'm going to stop there.
To be on this panel. Now, I really want to thank Esther for agreeing to be on this panel. I'm very pleased to see Eric willing to respond to these questions.
Okay. I'm going to be pretty incoherent in my response because I am going to try and respond to some specific points rather than give a reasoned history of the generation intense future plans, et cetera, of ICANN. But I'd like to make some points, and then I'll try and give a more coherent and when you talk in the second session that's going to happen after lunch. And meanwhile, I'm just trying to turn off my computer while I do this, because I do not have a nice PowerPoint presentation, and we, in fact, have exactly 11 minutes until noon. No, whatever. Let me just not try to respond to everything, but say, first off, I really wish that all of you could get your stories straight, because I feel that if we pitted Tony Rutkowski on the one hand against Ralph Nader and let's have a government charter to run this on the other, we at ICANN in the middle would come out looking very nice and moderate and kind of like a consensus organization, which is what we're trying to be. And, you know, one thing that makes me happy as interim chairman of ICANN is, in fact, that we're not being criticized all from one direction. We're being criticized from so many different directions that it's clear there's no way we can satisfy everybody. And as I think it was either Milton or Michael who talked about consensus and not being happy with the results. No one ever pretended that consensus meant unanimity. The whole point is trying to figure out where there's some kind of center of belief about the various issues we have to deal with. And it may be that there are some where there will be no consensus at all. And frankly, I think there are very few cases where consensus actually is necessary. And what we're trying to do at ICANN is find those one or two ones right down at the bottom where it is. And then personally, I'd like to leave a lot of that to the market. So let me just go through some of the points I noticed. One, the notion of shared registries and the economic model for registries and so forth and so on, whatever anybody thinks ICANN's opinion is wrong, because ICANN doesn't have one yet. Mike Roberts has one that I think he's being fairly clear about. I have a somewhat different one. But neither of us speaks for ICANN, which needs to wait for the DNSO and the forces of consensus as they exist to figure that one out. So, you know, please, you can criticize for what we've done, but don't criticize for what we haven't done yet. There may have been misinterpretations of various individuals' opinions, but that is not something that any decision has come to as yet. So, let me talk about where I see ICANN being. And at the same time, you know, I'd like to just say personally, we know we're not perfect. We're not trying to claim that we are. Sometimes it appears that we are because we're overreacting to the criticism. But most of the criticism we're getting is healthy. I mean, that's what we're supposed to be getting. We're not supposed to be going forward untrammeled, making decisions without input. And you know, it's kind of natural that if people like what we're doing, they're not going to make a lot of input. If they don't like what we're doing, the input is mostly intended to guide us. Some of it, yes, is intended to just stop us in our tracks or try and replace us with something else. But by and large, the criticism we're getting is properly interpreted as guidance. And it is often, I think, properly directed at places where we are not yet perfect. But at the same time, I can't sit still and listen to Tony complain about our huge complexity and then complain that we have no accountability, no procedures, etc. The complexity you see, which looks, I agree, truly horrifying when you have all those little boxes there. Yeah, if you just made the boxes look like curves and made it look like self-organizing things swirling up from the bottom, it would look very nice, and emerging complexity and all these great kinds of things, which is what we're trying to do. So if you would just change your boxes, I would. You know, that is what accountability means, for better or worse. It means having a fair amount of process and procedure. It means having, yeah, perhaps an excessive number of rules and bureaucracy and so forth and so on. But it is necessary. Otherwise, we would turn into this untrammeled, powerful organization that some people claim we are. Now, to consider the very first question that is asked, and a very legitimate question. Why is ICANN necessary at all? I mean, what's the point? Why can't we just let things go on very nicely the way they were? And there are, in fact, a number of answers to that very legitimate question. The fact is, the Internet is not the same as it once was, and it's continuing to evolve and change. It's getting much larger. The nice, lightweight structure we had with John Purcell and Joyce Reynolds was not accountable. It had no checks and balances in it. There was really no recourse. They were fair, they were reasonable, and so you didn't really need it. But let's face it, you can't have two people dealing with all the disputes that are going to arise. And I personally would rather see, at least in the area of domain names, where whether you give it an area code or a TLD, or you give it something that you call a context, or you create what you call a private namespace, if you're going to have a unique ID, then you need to be sure that someone else doesn't have that unique ID. If you want to filter content, you can make your own decisions. If you want to define spam, you can create your own filters. If you want to control freedom of speech, you can go fight a government. And God bless you fighting those governments. Those things do not need to be consistent. I think if you have inconsistent resolution of disputes concerning domain name conflict against trademarks in what are called open TLDs, there I think you do have a problem. And so it does make sense to have a uniform dispute resolution procedure and a couple of rules that make it clear what is acceptable and what is not. You can argue about precisely what those rules should be, and we're going to, and I don't think we've gotten it quite right yet, but I think it's in everybody's interest for those rules to be clear and predictable. But that same reasoning does not apply to content, and it does not apply even to privacy, where there are lots of other considerations. And so part of the mission at ICANN is to restrict itself only to those very few areas where you really cannot let competition and different business models and diversity and all those kinds of things do it. And those of you gathered in this room and lots of people elsewhere are part of the forces keeping our mission limited. Because number one, you're going to stop us, and number two, you're not going to agree on what we should do, and therefore we won't be able to do it. And that's right and proper. You are, and the criticisms are, part of the structure that is creating and defining ICANN as we go forward. And why don't I leave it at that? I haven't actually, well, okay, I have GAC written down here. Let me take that one up, and then let me just take Q&A, or maybe the panelists want to discuss. The GAC, well, we have Tony's thing where it says we have to talk to GAC before we do anything. We do. We have to talk to the public before we do anything. We have to talk to our members. We have to talk to all the, we have to put up on our website all the things we're planning to do before we do anything. The GAC is an advisory committee. It is not a supporting organization which has some statutory power within ICANN. The GAC does not tell us what to do. And yes, it is what the government's wish it might be something else. But it does not control anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Question about that. Because like Milton, I know historians and communications and speaking. I've never seen an institution created in the way Jack has been created and operating in the way Jack is operating. And I'm just really curious about one particular dimension. Supposedly it's not a decision-making body at all, but yet I keep seeing these things where they're issuing these reaffirmations of the status of domain name spaces in the public, global public resource. And country code TLDs are the sovereign property of government. Now, how does this non-decision-making body start to make these kinds of proclamations. What are they reaffirming out there, and what is the significance of that activity?
Okay. Well, just as they can make, I mean, anybody can make a decision if they feel like it. The real question is, who is obliged to carry out that decision? The fact of the matter is, again, I'd like to get Ralph Nader up here pretending the side of government. I'm still unfriended with it. What I would call a reasonable meeting. To me, there's a difference, as we all know, between the ECCLD and the GCLD. And the GAC is defined as self-directed with the GCLD. You know, they think they're governments, they think they should rule the world. A lot of people here think they're governments, and they think they should shrivel up and die. And the fact is, they have a fair amount of power as governments. And the goal, I think, is to, in some sense, provide an internet-based counterweight, precisely because things like, well, why can't we just do manifest law? Well, we can't just do manifest law because the net operates across governments, and there are different countries involved where there may be different manifest laws. So the GAC is trying to reaffirm what it sees as the proper order.
That antitrust you may change with the WTO as well, by the way. But let's take, do panelists want to respond to each other very briefly?
A couple of things on GAC. GAC not only has the right to confer in advance, it has the right to confer in secret in advance.
And with itself, not with us. They can't tell us to do anything in private.
Read the minutes. They conferred in secret with the board. And even the New York Times reporter couldn't find out what was going on. Point two, there's very little difference between Jamie Love, Ralph Nader, or anything like that.
Does Jamie agree?
I think there's a surprising degree of agreement among a lot of people that would identify themselves as libertarians, and people kind of maybe don't think of my position or Ralph's is on that point. But there's a lot of the issues about the governance issues. I think there's a lot of shared concerns and points of view. So I think that Tony's right in some respects. He's not. He had a lot of slides in his presentation, and I don't want to say for 100% of the slides, but I think that there are a lot of, and we'll go over it this afternoon. There are a lot of areas where there's agreement that there's certain things that ought to be done that people with very different political spectrum would agree upon.
Simply just to say that there are lots of concerns about what ICANN is doing, but I would say there's a lot of disagreement about who should be making those decisions instead.
One sentence. The policy debate space is not two-dimensional here. For some of us, it's at least three or maybe it's seven-dimensional. And for some of us, GAC is not one of the top two problems.
Let's go to the floor. If you could try to limit your questions to a minute or so, it would really be helpful. Please identify your question.
I feel like I'm listening to a lot of people giving correct descriptions of different parts of the elephant. And exacerbated by the very important elephant. And fundamentally, what seems to be happening is you're imposing a lot of irreconcilable but very different agendas on the core DNS, which was originally a technical mechanism. Now we've overlaid property values on it, we've overlaid possible contact association, everything, and we're told it's too late to change anything. And instead of if we have to fix anything, we're going to impose more regulations on it, more consequence. At the heart of it is that there are lots of different mechanisms that are very important. DNS has a registry solution. The DNS has a way of saving directly lookup to the token in a separate issue. And unless you can separate these issues out, I don't see how we can get any resolution while at the same time to make it more and more crucial to this issue.
Is that
the comment that I'm saying, in fact, I agree with everybody, except the problem is that we got we've got to take this elephant apart and slice it up and throw the pieces out separately.
As Carl Auerbach and Boston working group and also the IDNO and also a member of ISOC and also John Pascal appointee to the IAHC. To emphasize what Michael said, process is the issue here. This set of talks reminds me of a fish, East Coast fish called the straw, and it often uses a verb. And I'm going to conjugate it in the past tense and the future tense. That is, I have been strawed, I will be strawed. Two cases. The individual domain name owners association made a petition, properly formed, in timely manner, to ICANN. That petition was formed with a fair amount of support. It was not discussed. It was ignored. Yet petitions by the main non-commercial group made after that time were on the agenda and accepted. We have this problem. Second point is, if you look at Tony's chart, there is no functional unit for the internet users. The closest thing to it is the General Assembly of the DNSO. Currently, it is nominating a panel of people to the ICANN board. That process of nomination has turned into a quasi-election. That election is merely advisory because it's a named council composed of seven groups, composed six of the seven are commercial, has the chance to overturn that election and make their own choices from the name selected. I happen to be the leading candidate by a factor of more than two out of that group. I fully expect in the future tense to be strawed by having my election invalidated. It is about process, and I believe ICANN has no legitimate process.
I'd like to react to that. I don't think it is entirely a matter of process, although I certainly support what you're saying, but I think you have to look at the political constellation that underlines why you were struck. In other words, if you look at the domain name supporting organization and its constituency structure, it's something I've spent many times, days thinking about. You have seven constituencies, but again, I spoke of a coalition in the formation of ICANN. So you have the business constituency, which is all large corporations that support the trademark owners. You have a special constituency for the trademark owners. That's six votes. And then you have the registrar constituency, which are core supporters who are part of that coalition, as I noted, and has a sort of a working agreement with the trademark owners. So that's nine votes. All that coalition has to do is pick up a couple of name council people from the CCPLD coalition or from the IFP coalition, which they often can't do because the IFP coalition also has core supporters on it, and you are straw. They don't want another constituency in there because that would dilute their power. So it's arithmetic. It's just political arithmetic. It's not the absence or presence of process.
It's called gerrymandering in political terms.
Let me interject one thing. On the question of legitimacy, I think this is a political matter. It's a great mistake, and one which I hope to be reversed, to do this sort of thing, sort of undermine legitimacy, to promise people direct representation and then take it away, even citing the fear of lawsuits, however justified that might have been. I don't think it was that justified. I think it desperately undermined the legitimacy of the entire cluster. And it's doubly so, and that was originally the existence of that direct representation was the reason given for not stating the individual constituency. And you can see now that there were problems with individual consistency. It wasn't beautiful, it had a messy birth, a bit like ICANN, probably no worse. But then, you know, people tried to make a good first go of it. They did seem to meet all the formal criteria for, you know, the bottom-up bubbling, using some of the more bottom-up than some of the things that were recognized. And again, the decision not to recognize it, forget the procedural details of how it happened. The bottom-line decision that it did not happen creates this expectation mismatch that I was talking about, which goes to legitimacy and notice. And politically, it's a shame because it means that whatever decisions come out of it are legitimately subject to notice.
As you know, Carl, we did in fact discuss the IDNO at length, both initially and later at the board meeting in Santiago in public. And it was there. Excuse me. You must have fallen asleep, which did not have been surprising. And yes, well, we talked about the IDNO at much greater length.
talked about what we talked about.
Yeah, we did not formally consider it, but we did talk about it. And you may have noticed, you may have noticed that I actually wrote a letter saying that I personally felt uncomfortable with the decision we had taken not to recognize that particular constituency. But that all things considered, I could live with it, given that there will be the at-large membership. Now, you can stand there and sneer, or you can say, well, gee, this is great. I'm going to work with you to help make that at-large
membership. The at-large membership is not an equivalent for being in the forum, the crucible in which policy over the Internet is made, which is the main name supporting organization. The at-large membership merely has at the receiving end of a whole chain of decisions, and all it can do is say yay or nay. It's like pushing a rock up a hill with a string. It doesn't work. The crucible of policy is in the DNSO with the constituency. If this were the case, why would not the constituency members of the trademark group want to be in the at-large? That's because the reason they aren't is because they know the place where power is in the DNSO itself, on the main council.
So then you're not worried about the at-large membership being captured by business interests, I hope.
I'm afraid it's never even going to be created. 5,000 people, basic starting point, it's not going to happen.
Why didn't you help us make it happen?
I've been trying for over 2 years.
You're there, it's also an important time. I mean, when it does, let's say it happens in 6 months, or 3 months. A lot of decisions have never been taken by that.
Yeah, that is true, and...
And with the headlong race of ICANN towards making substantive policy decisions, once we get an at-large in place, it's going to have to make the uphill fight of reversing all of these decisions because it has not been a party to any of these decisions.
From the inside, it doesn't feel like a headlong race. Okay. Hi, I'm Nikki Berry from the Dominion Rights Coalition and the Boston Working Group and the IDNO and the Intellectual Property Constituency and some of the working groups. I don't even remember which ones anymore. But the first thing I'd like to say is thanks very much for this presentation. It's been very, very helpful from all sides. And to reiterate what Carl said, only in a little bit of a different way, we are being drawn from the individual domain holders, constituency, from the small business owners, and you know, from non-commercial domain name owners by the mere existence of the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy. It's something that is probably skewed towards trademark only. And you know, one of the things that's going on in the intellectual property constituency currently is that the group from INTA is very upset that they're not getting enough. This is something that kind of points to if both INTA is upset and the DNRC are upset, well, perhaps we should revisit the idea. One more thing. I believe that a lot of the opposition to ICANN has been from sheer frustration. A lot of us have been attempting to make concrete contributions. We've had significant lack of recognition of those contributions. We've been called names by Mike Roberts in the press. Whenever any one of us says something, the immediate retort is, oh, you must be working for NSI, or somehow NSI must have influenced your ideas or your opinions. That's something that I don't believe captures the real essence of the opposition here. I think that ICANN could do itself a great favor to have more people involved on the mailing list. And thank you very much, Esther, for actually posting the IFWT list. If we could get more of the board members telling us what was going on, it would be very, very useful. Things like our comments, you know, well-written comments that have been sent to comments at ICANN.org are not acknowledged. They're not put on the website, and we can never get any kind of information as to why not. For example, I've posted multiple comments to the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, even writing them in HTML, which, oh my goodness, my poor brain, sent them to the comments list. I have gotten absolutely no response. And also, you know, one important thing is the rumor in Working Group C that even though there is consensus that there should be 6 to 10 new GCLDs, that all of them will be run by a registry run by CORE. you know, this is something that's very difficult, and I was wondering if the panel could speak to whether or not these kinds of frustrations are universal and how we can fix them.
I'm Todd LaPorte from George Mason University. I have a question for Esther Dyson. I appreciate her being here, as many of us do, to sit in a hot seat at short notice. But I specifically wondered, Esther, if you would mind responding to Milton's comments about his political economic analysis of the constituents that make up various parts of ICON. And if you disagree with him, in what respect do you think he's wrong? As you said earlier, view from the inside things look differently than they do for those of us on the outside. And you might go a long way to clarifying the frustrations that people in this room currently have. The second is, it seems like you walked into a sort of buzzsaw of a political role that you may not have thought you were walking into. And also from the inside, maybe of your head, maybe you can give us just two words on how all this feels to you. Thank you.
Let me just underline this. It's the issue of engagement by deciders is one way in which internet decision making should be really different from governmental decision making. There are all kinds of reasons why in government processes and party contracts and all the rest of it that people in bureaucracy can't speak out on them. One of the really good things about internet style governance is you can relax that rule and nothing bad happens. In part because judicial review is almost impossible. They can't get someone to easily do what they say. And it is a great, great lost opportunity that the people making these decisions aren't giving and taking. Maybe they're taking it. Maybe they read everything very carefully and they just don't know it. But, you know, it's not always obvious. Maybe we're crazy, really wrong and they know better. That would be nice, too. The engagement, and that's just, again, the shining counterexample to the general rule, because she is on the list. And this is doing it. One has no sense to make with a colleague of that. Yeah, that's a lot.
When I went to the FCC, I had a shared values with most of the people in the cable television bureau. We wanted to put ourselves out of existence because we knew it was fundamentally flawed, and we did. When I went to the ITU, I was chief of international telecommunication regulation. When I left the ITU, it was gone. I was put it out of the system. Actually, in some ways, the internet arrangements to replace that in the WTO. I think it's not a matter of if, but when I can disappear, because it is fundamental value. And I would encourage it to avoid, to think about encouraging this demand for consumption.
A little bit on what Nicky was asking, and then try to pose some broader questions. Yes, the people who are participating in the working group are probably all frustrated, and all frustrated from different sides of the equation. And the conclusion I draw from this is not so much that we need better processes or that the board needs to be more responsive. In fact, I think in some ways, by pretending to be able to be responsive to all of the interests that have a place, they're simply getting themselves deeper and deeper into trouble, particularly when they have no process that's well-defined and no firm institutional structure. So that, to my mind, this is why I say ICANN has failed, is that the ICANN was set up to solve a problem that shouldn't be solved. Okay? It was set up as a governance structure in order to give, you know, the internet technical community, as embodied by Vint Cerf and ISOC, control of the root, and in order to do that, they had to form coalitions with the trademark owners and the Europeans and certain other major corporations, and they want to use the root to impose a governance regime on the internet. And so for me, Nicky, it is a hopeless game to continue to demand that they're more responsive and that they listen to what you want to do, because the whole purpose of the organization is to marginalize people like you. So that's my basic take on it. Now, the point of responsibility and point of vulnerability for people like me is what is the alternative. I didn't even have time to get to my slides about that.
It's obviously more than an afterthought. It's something we need to think seriously about. And with that opening, I will turn it over to Rick.
I guess I see my job as turning ICANN into that alternative itself. On Mickey's thing, you know, I wish we had more staff so that we could acknowledge everything we get and deal with it in a timely fashion. And I apologize for not doing so, but the comments are being read and being considered and so forth. And the point that someone made somewhere that we should be clear about how we consider the comments and how we either agree with them or why we do not agree with them or they were not incorporated, I think is a very good one. On the political economic constituency issue, yeah, it's a constituencies are a problem, but so is anything else. You certainly don't want votes in the sense of, you know, then you just have people with a lot of money hiring more people to come and vote at various meetings and then it would all work by voting. And this may not be the ideal structure, but it's the one we have got right now, and we're working with it. We did, in fact, finally get the non-commercial domain name holders constituency in place. I do not think it represents the interests of individuals. I do think the interests of individuals will be represented by the at-large membership, which has will have 9 board members, which is a nice counterbalance to the 9 who represent either technical or commercial interests. What was I going to say? Something. Well, let me go on to how I feel about all this personally. Yeah, I didn't expect it to be quite so lively. At the same time, it is almost entirely not personal. And so it is not emotionally as hard as many of my friends seem to think it may be. Yeah, this is very, very interesting stuff. It's also very, very important. It's important to do it right. I'm not sure what that means. I have a very open mind. I haven't figured out what I think about whether or not there should be new DTLDs or how they should be constituted or who should run them or how many there should be. Unlike what everybody seems to think that we've already secretly decided this, we don't really know. I certainly don't know. And I'm looking forward to hearing the arguments on all sides. Fundamentally, my job personally is to create an organization that is going to be responsive to me when I become an outsider by October of 2000. And I'm going to be a very, very good critic of ICANN because I will know an awful lot about it. And I agree with Tony. If there's no reason for it to exist, we should make sure it disappears. But right now there is a reason for it to exist, if only to be that lightning rod that people mention. What I'm looking forward to much sooner is, in fact, the presence of at least half of the board being elected and being much more visible, being unafraid to come out with strong points of view. We do not feel that invulnerability that you mentioned, Michael. And I think it's a pity, but as you know, from day one, everybody was talking about suing us or doing this or that. And so I'm probably the least. Well, we hope so. Maybe somebody should win on some particular item. I mean, it's not inconceivable. But it takes a fair amount of courage to come out and say something if you think people are going to immediately jump all over you and your lawyers are going to say you shouldn't have said it because you might have made yourself vulnerable to some idiot suing you on the basis of such and such. And, yeah, I would like for this, I would like for the board to be as open and unscrambled as most of you in this room are. And I do think that the gestalt of the board will change substantially in November when we have elected members, and I think that's a really good thing to look forward to.
And lunch is now waiting to be served to us. Ralph Nader is being up, I suppose, as we speak. So, Hans? Anything else, or?